Welcome, everyone, to the Cup of Coffee podcast with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This has been recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world. Today's topic is property sourcing compliance, keeping you on the right side of the law with Tina Walsh. Before we start, I'd like to say by way of a disclaimer that today is a wonderful discussion, but that nothing said here constitutes financial advice. You should always take professional advice before investing your hard-earned cash. There may be the odd unplanned swear word along the way as well. The format is that Tina will speak to us for a bit and then we'll take some questions. So for those live on the call, please get some questions ready. I'm posting in the group. It was while serving the police service that Tina's passion for the law and compliance blossomed. She was forced to retire from the service due to injury in 1995, not really knowing what to do next, dreaming that one day she would start and run her own business. Privately, she and her husband, Tony, had always risen up the property ladder by buying, renovating, moving in, and then selling. Tina's interest in the property sector was reignited when in late 2011, it was suggested that property sourcing was a good sector to start a business in. And so she spent the next 10 months researching legislation, regulation, and compliance guides to create the legal and compliant platform that in October 2012 became Sanctuary Property Sourcing Limited, providing a bespoke service throughout the northwest of the UK. Tina is passionate about the property sector, but especially property sourcing, and for many years held an idea in her head for a book written in plain English to pass on the knowledge that she has spent years learning and applying in her own business. From this idea, her book, Property Sourcing Compliance, Keeping You on the Right Side of the Law, was created. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, everyone. How are you doing? Thank you for the invitation, Tom. It's great to be here.
Oh, I really appreciate you taking the time. I've dabbled in property sourcing over the years, so I'm particularly interested to see which parts of it were compliant and which parts of it need improvement, because I'm sure there's plenty of those. So what have you got for us?
Oh, we've got a mixture today about the regulations, about fairy tales, about the future, about something called NAPSA, and all sorts of things in between as well, Tom.
That sounds like an ethereal mix. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be great. And it'll be great to have some questions at the end as well.
Sure.
Morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation. This morning is a bit of a mix. There's something in it for investors and a whole load in it for potential sources. So let's start. What we're covering this morning: is property sourcing regulated? The two ways to source, sourcing agent's business setup, the pain of penalties, interesting facts and figures, and the future is almost here, NAPSA. Let's get going. But first of all, I want to talk to you a little bit about myself. This is my least favorite slide, so I always put it first. But for those of you that don't know anything about me, a little bit about who Tina Walsh is. When I left school, I became a police officer, and I served just over 14 years as a police officer in the Lancashire Constabulary until I was injured on duty and had to leave. My husband and I have always been interested in property. And in 2005, we first invested in property and we purchased completely wrong. We weren't aware of any training courses back then. There may have been, but we weren't aware of any. And we bought brand spanking new off plan from a local builder and got it completely wrong. We bought a 4-bedroom townhouse and a 3-bedroom flat. Now, the idea in principle was great, that we purchase properties, we rent them out, we boost our income, because at that time I was at home as a mum with 3 children and Tony was still working. So the idea was brilliant. Sadly, the practice didn't turn out quite as well. And as those of you that were in property back then will know, in 2007, 2008, there was a huge dip in the property market. Because we were buying new, there was a delay on the build. We moved in 2005, but in 2007, the property market dipped. And so we ended up selling the 3-bedroom apartment after renting it for a while. We had to move into the townhouse, because of the way the property market had gone. And we ended up living there for 11 years. And just to build the picture as to how much we didn't make in 11 years, we made £85,000 on the sale of the townhouse after 11 years of living in it. So it didn't really go to plan. We got our fingers burnt. We actually lost some money, I believe, on the flat. And so we decided that property investing maybe wasn't for us, but we still wanted to start a business for when Tony retired from the police for us to both work in. I've been sourcing now for over 9 years, and it came about that we attended a live meeting session training event in Manchester in December 2011, signed up for mentorship and started in January 2012. And we were talking about investing in property again, but because of our experience in 2005, it was decided that, why don't you look at sourcing? And I said, what's property sourcing? And that is when our mentor said, go and research it. And that was where it all started. And so for the first 10, 12 months, I researched legality and how to be good. And so it took me a while, and I spent that 12 months looking for investors to work with, and researching the legality around everything and setting up our business, our sourcing business. We now work directly with investors, sourcing for their needs only. So we source to order. We don't source as most sources do, find a deal and then try to find an investor on Facebook. We bring our investors on board. We carry out our due diligence, get to know them very well, and then we source directly for their needs. I'm passionate about raising standards in the property sector. Because of the research that I did in the first 12 months, I realised that no one was talking about how to legally operate a sourcing business, what the regulations were, everything around it. And I've also learned over the years that investors are often robbed blind by unscrupulous sourcing agents. So I'm here and starting to raise standards across the UK for property sources. Tony and I did invest again in property in 2017-18. We actually flipped a block of flats. So we jumped in both feet following our disaster in 2005. We bought a block of flats that was a repossession with cash and bridging. We refurbed with our own cash. We were on a BRR, a buy, refurbish, refinance. So we had the finance in place to refinance. We were holding for cash flow. But in between being a police officer and now, I have a period of history in the healthcare sector. And the company approached us and asked if we had any blocks of flats in a particular area in the Northwest. And we said, well, actually, we're renovating some. They came to have a look. They wanted them. They offered us a really good price for it. So we decided to flip the flats. And so we flipped and we sold them on. The images to the right, that's me at 6 months old. People laugh because that's, for those of you that are old enough to remember, that is a little plastic toy doll called Noddy. And Noddy was a cartoon character on TV at the time. And in order to make me quiet and stop screaming so that I could have my photograph taken, I was trying to rip Noddy's head off, which my dad says is the reason why I ended up being a police officer. Although I promise you, I never tried to rip anyone's head off. And the image below that is probably one of the most memorable moments, not necessarily for the right reasons in the police. There was an armed robbery on my patch one morning. One of my colleagues was shot. I came around the corner in my police vehicle 60 seconds later, and the guy that had just shot my colleague was walking back to the getaway vehicle and decided to stand and aim the shotgun at me through the window at my head. So that is a lasting memory of my time in the police force. That's a little bit about me. Let's move on. Is property sourcing regulated? I hear an awful lot on Facebook groups, LinkedIn, networking, all sorts of places of people saying that the problem with the sourcing sector is that it's not regulated. Well, I'm sorry to dispel these rumours and suggestions, but it is regulated and it's heavily regulated. There are approximately 14 pieces of legislation and regulation that govern the sector. And what I call the Mother Act, the core of them, and the one that is still going today despite its age, is the Estate Agents Act 1979, which gave us the definition of estate agency work. Now, don't mistake estate agency work as high street estate agents. Estate agency work covers a whole host of sins. And the definition states this: estate agency work includes introducing and or negotiating with people who want to buy or sell freehold or leasehold property and the Scottish equivalent, including commercial and agricultural, and where this is done in the course of business and pursuant to instructions from a client. That is what sourcing agents do. and we are governed by everything that governs high street estate agents. Now, my book was mentioned earlier, and since it was launched 4 years ago this month, we just passed the 4 year launch date, I've been building relationships up with National Trading Standards and the Property Ombudsman, and both their heads of legals have read my book, and the feedback from them is they agree with my interpretation of the law and the regulations around what sourcing agents do. And I've had a few people saying, well, it's just Tina Walsh. She's just coming up with all of this stuff, baffling you with science and legislation and regulation because she wants to build £1 million property trading business. No, that is not the case. This is correct. And the reason that I'm doing this is because nobody else teaches it. Nobody else knows it as I do. And nobody else wants to stand up on stage and talk about it as I do, because you've got to love it to be able to talk about it and bring it over in a fun way so that people understand it without being frightened of it. So yes, it is regulated. Now, there are two different ways that sources can operate. You can find a deal and then find a buyer. So you find the property or land, you package the deal up, you find the buyer, and then you complete the sale. The second way is finding the buyer first, understanding exactly what they want, and then find a deal that fits. So you find the investor to work with, understand exactly what they're looking for, find the property or land that fits that they're looking for, and then complete the deal. Those are the two ways that you can work. But dependent on which way you work can really screw how you operate your business and still be compliant, especially with money laundering regulations, which are one of the key regulations that sources need to understand. So if you don't understand what is required of you under money laundering regulations, then you really need to get a good grip of it, because at the moment their fines are eye-watering. And recently, actually a sourcing agent was named and fined, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So sources business setup. This is an operation. This is simple business setup for a sourcing agency. You must have a minimum of £100,000 professional indemnity insurance. And please be very, very careful where you get your insurance from, because not all insurance policies are made equal. And if yours says estate agency business on it, there is a good likelihood that it won't cover you if something goes wrong, because the funders of insurance, not the brokers that find it for you, but actually the insurance funders themselves, consider sourcing agents to be a much higher risk than a high street estate agent. And what there are what they call off the peg policies. So just a basic policy for a high street estate agent, which they often throw at sourcing agents. It's cheap, and sourcing agents think that they've got one over on those that are paying £300 a year for the privilege, but they haven't, because if anything goes wrong, it is not fit for purpose. So please ensure that your policy states that you are a sourcing agent and you carry out a sourcing role, whatever they describe that as, not an estate agent. You need to register with one of two property redress schemes. There used to be three years ago. One of them withdrew from the market. That was backed by RICS. We now are left with two. The first one is the Property Ombudsman, or TPO. And the second one is Property Redress Scheme, or PRS. People always ask me what the difference is. And up until earlier this year, about March, I'd have said not much in particular. The TPO is the original and not for profit. They also are an ombudsman, which means that they offer different services as well. They're more highly regulated than just a standard redress scheme. PRS, they just offer redress services. They are for profit and they're run by property professionals. But in about March this year, I discovered that there was a more distinct difference, quite by accident. And I just want to describe to you what that is so that you guys know what the differences are, and you can make an informed judgment as to which one will be better for you. The TPO states that they will hear complaints from anyone, whether that's a consumer, a business, a trust, or a charity, anybody, with a provable turnover of less than £3 million a year. Now, that basically covers the vast majority of people that will be using a sourcing service in the UK. There won't be many investors that have that kind of turnover that would maybe use a sourcing service. They may have it built in-house. However, PRS don't have a code of practice that they operate by and police by. They use consumer protection regulations. And the reason I found out that there might be a slight issue is that I help investors free of charge to take complaints through Source's complaint process, if they have one, and onto their redress scheme to try to get them cash back when I believe that they've been royally robbed. And earlier on this year, I was working with someone, and it was the first time that I'd worked with a redress scheme, the PRS. It had always been through the TPO, and we'd had no problems and a lot of success. We went through the Source's non-existent complaints process, weren't happy, so upgraded it to the PRS complaints process. And I talked the investor through what to write, what to put, and structure it in a way as I would have done in the police for what we used to call a not guilty going to court case. So it's taking the emotion out of it and just stating the facts on a timeline and providing evidence at the appropriate points. So the complaint went into PRS, thought nothing of it. The person that I was dealing with emailed me and sent me a copy of the PRS response. And basically it was, really sorry basically to hear that you've had all these problems, but as you invested through a limited company and are not considered to be a consumer, the best that we can get you is an apology letter. Now, Tina wasn't happy about that, as you can well imagine. Manu neither was the investor either. This person had handed over probably about £10,000 for rent-to-rent deals, which hadn't surfaced, were very, very poor, et cetera, et cetera. So I got in touch with the head of compliance. I've said it, guys, that's drink. I should have said head of being good. And if you weren't in our little group earlier on, you won't have a clue what I'm talking about. But the guys will be chuckling now that we're in our group. So anyway, I got in touch with the head of being good at PRS and had a 2-hour chat with a lovely guy called Sean Hooker, who is their head. And sadly, during that meeting, I couldn't get a definition as to how they differentiate between a consumer and a business. What I was told was that they will take each complaint on an individual basis, and depending on whether they say that person is too experienced or the business is good enough that they would have enough money to take a private prosecution or however else they feel about it, I couldn't get a clear definitive answer as to where the demarcation line is. As we have with TPO, which is a £3 million turnover, which I love, it's a straight line in the sand. I couldn't get that from PRS. And I did a video on it, which went viral. I'm not sure that everybody was particularly happy about it, but I wanted sources to know. You see, we must legally register with a redress scheme. Now, the reason for registering is that if something goes wrong in that relationship between you and the seller or the buyer, that there is a backstop known as the redress scheme that can help provide them with some recourse should the redress scheme agree that you have been naughty. Now, if you don't know if that redress scheme is going to cover the complaints from your investors because they've invested through a limited company, you don't know. There's no point in paying for a service that doesn't cover you. Now, at this moment in time, I'm waiting for another call with property redress guys. There's two of them this time next week, which they've asked for and I've agreed to. I'm hoping to get some clarity on this. I'm hoping they're going to draw a line in the sand to make it really, really clear for us, because otherwise my comment to them, and still will be, as far as sourcing agents are concerned, we're better off going with the TPO for assured cover, because we don't know if you guys will cover our clients or not, because the vast majority of investors now invest through limited companies and we don't know if you'll still class them as consumers or if you won't. So that's where we stand at the moment with the redress schemes. Data protection, you need to register with the Information Commissioner's Office for data protection supervision. And the reason for that is because as sourcing agents, we gather a huge amount of very, very personal data. And if a sourcer that you're going to work with hasn't got a clue about data protection, how to protect your data, they won't tell you, or they can't tell you where they're going to hold it other than in an attachment on an email, I would run to the hills, because the level of information that you're going to give them, if someone breaks into, steals that information, there is more than enough to clone you as a person and cause you no end of trouble. We also have to register for anti-money laundering supervision with HMRC. And that is another legal requirement. These three are written into legislation. This one you have to do before you can join one of the redress schemes. So these three are written into legislation. This one is a, if you like, is a practice requirement for the redress schemes. And as I say, money laundering is the one that's really hammering our sector at the moment with huge fines. Now, all of this to set up approximately, if you're getting 100K, which is the minimum insurance cover, and there's just one of you in the business, all of this will cost you around £1,100 in year one. About £1,100. So that is just the registrations and business setup. Over and above that, guys, they need other stuff as well, which is equally as important and isn't offered in many, many places. So the fairy tale that I was talking to you about, we all know that there are a lot of deal packaging courses, sourcing courses, whatever courses they are out there, people teaching how to source. People have sourced one deal and then set up a how to deal source course. Never ceases to amaze me the amount of people that are churning out almost on a monthly basis. Now, the problem with these courses, and I have no problem with these courses running, what I have a problem with is they don't tell you what they should be telling you, in my opinion. So when they tell you that registrations make you fully compliant, they're telling you fairy tales, because they don't. Registrations are the tip of the iceberg, guys. Literally the tip of the iceberg. They are the setup of the business. They are not the day-to-day running of the business. And like the Titanic found out, it's not the bit of the iceberg that you can see that will sink you. It's what lies below that bit that no one talks about that will really, really hurt. And sadly, a lot of these prospective sourcing agents are coming out. And since I've been standing on stage now, that term, be good, which I'm not allowed to say the real one, and I've already said it once, and it's written on the screen anyway, be compliant. They're spouting it from the roofs that they're compliant, but actually all they've done is registered and they've got the insurance, if you're lucky. So they've hit the tip of the iceberg, but they haven't got a clue about what sits below. Not got a clue. And for you investors, if you want to test whether a source just doesn't have the registrations, which is great if they have, but it isn't the be all and end all from your perspective. If you ask them if they have a terms of business agreement that they want you to sign, and can you read it first, and they say, I've got an NDA, will that do? No. If you say, have you got an AML risk assessment? And they say, what's that? Run to the hills. Don't be fooled if you think, and I hear an awful lot of trainers saying it, sourcing agents are small fry. There's only you in your business. The powers that be aren't interested in small fry. They're not watching you. Oh, yes, they are. Here are some examples of HMRC fines. UK Settled the Bid is a type of sourcing company for serviced accommodation type business. And what I want you to look at is not necessarily the fine or the name of the company or where it was. You don't need to know what the regulations and the subsections are. What I want you to do is to read this bit in the middle. Because once you've registered with HMRC for money laundering, you have to understand all about what these guys are talking about, or you're going to get clobbered with one of these fines. Registering is not enough. So these were fine because they failed to carry out risk assessments. They didn't have correct policies, controls and procedures in place. They didn't have staff training. They didn't carry out customer due diligence, and the timing of verification was wrong. What does all that mean? It means that we go back to one of the first lies that I talked about, which was a two-way source. Timing of verification is something that HMRC are red hot on at this moment in time. And that means when you carry out the due diligence on your client. And when I say due diligence, I don't just mean checking a driver's license. I mean checking not just that they have the cash to make the purchase, but also where that cash has come from and an audit trail to show it. Now, according to HMRC, and this is written, you can go and research it. It isn't me that's come up with it just to fulfill my own criteria. What they say about timing of verification is that you must have carried out due diligence at the earliest point in your business relationship. And the mistake that a lot of sourcing agents make is they think that they've had a chat with a potential investor. They've told them that they want a 2 or 3 bedroom terrace house in this area, in this postcode area, this sort of price range. This is the level of refurbishment that they want, and they want to do this with it. And they put them in an email list, and then all they're going to do is fire through any deals that come through that might fulfill that criteria. Now, I believe that is a business relationship formed, and they should already have done customer due diligence on that investor. But I'm telling you now that 99% of sourcing agents absolutely don't do that. And some of them may be registered with HMRC, but HMRC are getting very, very crafty at the moment. And I'll talk to you about that in a moment. Here's another one. Sheridan's was a very, very small estate agent, family run, high street estate agent. Breaches, failures in conducting due diligence, verification of identity and proper record keeping. These are over £3,500. This is one that the TPO issued recently to a sourcing company. And they were in Blackburn, which is very, very local to me. And the TPO found that properties identified did not meet the investor's criteria, and a clause in the buying agreement, which allowed the deposit to be retained, was not made clear. This resulted in the £3,000 award being made. The problem was the sourcing agent didn't make the award. And so they've been kicked out of the TPO completely, which means now legally they can't operate. Now, what the HMRC are doing at this moment in time, pre-COVID, they used to come out and do doorstep checks. So they'd come out to your place of business. During COVID, somebody had a light bulb moment, shall we say, and decided that they could send letters out or emails. And so what they're doing is when you're registered and you're in their list, and you have to register as an estate agent, there's no other way of registering with HMRC for money laundering supervision. That's how you're registered. So their computer must just select at random however many people and send these letters out or emails. And what they do is they ask within 10 days that you send to them copies of your policy, your risk assessment, your written procedures. You send them copies of documentation for your clients that you've worked with in the last 12 months and any deals that you've sourced, and all of the due diligence records that you've kept on them. If you don't send it within 10 days, they're hammering. Absolutely hammering. So, some interesting facts and figures for you. The reason that HMRC is red hot is because money laundering is considered to be a really, really serious problem all across the UK. And in 2019/2020, they issued in total just over £9 million worth of fines. So far, between the end of 2020 and into 2021, they've issued £23 million worth of fines. So you can see that light bulb moment has really brought them in some extra cash. And you might be interested that actually HMRC are not government funded. They're funded by memberships and fines. So they're rubbing their hands together at this moment in time. However, the National Crime Agency that looks at crime across all aspects across the UK each year create a report. Now, yes, I'm a geek and I like reading these things, and I'm not suggesting that you guys do at all, but I find the information really interesting, and part of it is about money laundering. And the 2020 report estimates that 100 billion with a B a year is being laundered through the UK alone. Now, another report done recently on estate agents about SARs, which are suspicious activity reports. And suspicious activity reports are supposed to be submitted to the National Crime Agency if you're working with someone and you suspect that dodgy dealing is going on. Now, during that period of time, that date range, 572,085 reports were submitted, of which from the estate agency sector, only 861, which is 0.15%. Another report, chatting to estate agents and asking them to fill in forms and questions, states that they believe at least 66% of estate agency businesses fail to comply with money laundering regulations on a day-to-day basis. And HMRC have just upgraded our sector from low risk to medium risk. Can you see why HMRC, the government, the National Crime Agency, believe that we're not doing all that we can do? We've been put on the front line because we are the first point of contact with regard to who's going to purchase a property and potentially launder money. Yes, you can say that solicitors do the checks. Yes, you can say that finance providers do the checks. But generally speaking, somebody who's laundering money wouldn't ask for finance. They'd be cash purchasers. And generally speaking, their solicitor would be on board with them and would be taking a dodgy backhander in a brown envelope. So if you don't have anybody else in the middle of that process, you're losing an awful lot of the dodgy dealing that could be caught. And we are expected to be doing it. And at this moment in time, we aren't. So they are all over us like a rash, guys. So the importance of compliance for a property sourcer. It's a professional foundation for your business. It shows that you understand that you set the business up professionally, that you just are not out to get a few grand off an investor and run to the hills to put in your pocket and spend on a holiday or leasing a Lamborghini or whatever they do with it these days. It shows proof that you're providing a high standard of service, not necessarily the greatest deals, because I can't guarantee that, but it shows that the service level setup is of a higher standard than, as I've said, probably 99% of the rest in the UK. It helps us prevent serious crimes such as money laundering and tax evasion, which is very, very costly for the UK. And it provides your investors with a professional quality and legal service. And that backstop, that safety net, if something goes wrong, they know that they have somewhere else to go to make that complaint rather than small claims court. Now I want to talk to you about the future. And it is almost here. And it's something that I have been working on for 4 years. And it's called the National Association of Professional Sourcing Agents. It's the first national association in the UK specifically for sourcing agents. And because it's such a mouthful, guys, it's called NAPSA. I wanted NASA, but for obvious reasons, I couldn't have NASA, sadly, but there you go. So we've got NAPSA instead. So what is NAPSA? Whoops, sorry, clicked on the screen. NAPSA is a professional association for sourcing agents, but it is going to provide also a free search facility for anyone in the UK, that's you investors, to search on the website for a sourcing agent that is a member. And you will be able to search on geographical location from whether it be Northwest or a specific town. And you will be able to search on investment strategy from serviced accommodation to HMO to rent to commercial to land, whatever it is that you want. And that search will bring up any sourcing agents when they become members and filled in their profile that operate in that geographical location and source for that particular strategy. But more importantly than that, NAPSA or our team behind NAPSA complete manual due diligence checks on every member before they become searchable. And we check their insurance details. We check that they have an insurance certificate. We check the registration with a redress scheme. We check the registration with the Information Commissioner's Office for data protection. We check the registration with HMRC for money laundering. But over and above that, we ask them to show and prove if they take a deposit up front, which is in part or in full refundable, the details of the account where it will kept and prove that they have client account insurance to cover it. We get them to prove that they have policies, risk assessments, written procedures in place, a reasonable contract that they would expect you as an investor to sign, not an NDA. If they fail any of those, they will not be accepted as a member and will not be on board. Now, for sourcing agents, What I want this to be is a cost-effective platform for you to market your professional business on. It's not just about a professional site where you just sit and you use a logo. We will have a trademark logo for all of our members. And as part of our code of conduct, which I have written and they will have to follow and it will be policed, they will have to show that trademark on their websites, on every document that goes out and on their emails. Every way that they communicate with you guys, that logo must be on. And we will police them. It won't be just when they apply and join. Randomly during the year, we will select members and check that they are still registered where they should be. But for sourcing agents, we are your guidance and your support and an opt-in for discounted education, which legally you have to have annually. We will update you on any changes in the law. If you're struggling with anything, we are there to help. And that is what I created NAPSA for. Stage one is live at the moment. We have 112 people registered to come through and test stage one of the system for us. If you guys go out on the website, we'll come up in a moment on the contact details. She's there. And if you search Northwest, my company comes up, and I think there's a few others on there at the moment. We're building in, going through and doing the manual checks and building the process for it at the moment. Stage two, which will come online, I hope next month, will be when the list comes up, you can click as an investor on an individual sourcer and it will open up that sourcer's profile and give you all of the information that you need about that sourcer. Images of the people in the company, a brief details about the company, information that you need if you want to go off and check independently about where they're registered. And you will be able to read and see on screen their terms of business agreement, their contract that they expect you to sign. And if you're not happy with it, you don't even have to contact them. That's the level that we have gone to for NAPSA. Here are some bits and pieces of information for you. I thought I brought these up there. The website for NAPSA is napsa.org.uk. Please go and have a look. It'd be great to have some feedback from you. Be gentle with me. I know there's some errors on it. We're working on them. Our training companies get property compliance. And of course, we have the Facebook group, Professional Sourcing Compliance Support with me. That's the end of the presentation now, guys. Thank you for listening, and I hope you really enjoyed the presentation.
Thank you very much, Tina. Getting some twinkles and rounds of applause from the assembled audience. Thank you very much indeed. I certainly enjoyed it very much, and like other people did too. I was really excited to have you on. I think it's incredibly useful to try and protect investors, if any are listening, although for those who are listening, from unscrupulous sources or sources who haven't sort of, you know, ticked all the boxes and more. And also to help new sources or people who are thinking about sourcing operate more, you know, operate more ethically and efficiently as a bit of a win-win all round, which is always a good thing. Starting nowhere in particular, and by the way, yeah, pop questions in the chat and we'll get through as many as we can. I've got a few here first, which is I had a question from a friend, which sounds like it was actually me, but actually was a friend, who said he had a friend who wanted, my friend's in property, he had a friend who wanted to buy a house and asked him to help because he knew about property. And he said, oh, I want to help my friend, and but I don't know if this is now sourcing. And he suddenly occurred to, hang on a minute, do I need all this paperwork in place? I was just helping a mate. I'm not doing this full time. I don't want to do this. I just wanted to help my friend. And you wanted to know, at what point does that become sourcing? And I first of all said I wasn't sure. You need to ask Tina. But also that it sounded like to me the key thing was whether you're getting paid or not.
Actually, the legislation doesn't mention payments. It just says operating as a business and in pursuant to instructions of a client. So it doesn't mention payment. But what I would say is, if it's a friend and it's a one-off and he wants to give you, you know, X amount of pounds for that, as long as you're not going to be setting up a business profile and everything that goes with it, I would have thought he would be absolutely fine, Tom, for that, okay, to be quite honest. That would be my gut feeling on it. We've got no precedent for it. Yeah, there's an exemption to the rules, which I can cover for you, which may help a little bit, Tom, if you want to go back with this. Section 1 gives you the definition in the estate agent. Section 4, I know it's geeky stuff, is this, guys, but I read this stuff and I just enjoy it. Section 4 in the definitions gives you what's known as exemptions. I'm not going to cover them all, but one of them states that to be classed as doing estate agency work, you have to have carried out some negotiation. So some people are now calling themselves introducers. But the problem for them is if they package the damn deal up, they've done the negotiation. So it doesn't make any difference what they call themselves. So if, for argument's sake, I have a friend down the street who says, I'm wanting to sell my property, I want to sell it fast, Tina. Do you know somebody who can help me? And I say, well, I don't, but I know somebody who might be able to do. By the way, he's going to give me £100 if I just pass your telephone details on. Is that okay? And they say, yes, I've introduced and I've got the £100. I don't need the compliance. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
If I say to him, oh, okay, I'm just going to come around and have a look at your property and make some notes and put a presentation together, and I've got a list of investors that want, and I'm going to get a fee for it, that is sourcing. Under any remit, that is sourcing. Are you with me? Everybody with me, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's...
So I think for your friend, Tom, if it's just a one-off and it's for a mate, I would say he's fine. I can't see a problem with it. It's his mate. As long as he doesn't set up and decide that it's, you know, it's earning him more money than his full-time job and decides to do it on the side as well.
Well, clearly at that point, he needs to get in touch with NAPSA, which sounds pleasing like NASA and makes me feel high-tech and like things are going to the moon. So that's great.
You have no idea about how much I wanted it to be NASA. I'm a space freak. Can you see?
Yeah. Look at that. I imagine if you were to, register NASA, it wouldn't be very long before you got a letter from a certain US-based organization.
That was what the solicitor said, to be honest. I mean, that discretion was the better part of only, yeah. I decided against that one.
Onto a sort of more basic question, let's imagine there's someone listening, maybe people, you know, all over the world listen to this podcast, which I'm very grateful for. And let's imagine there's somebody I live in Australia and I want to invest in property in Manchester or thereabouts, northwest of the UK. It's a great market. And there's a sourcing agent here who looks good. So I'm going to use this sourcing agent and they're going to help me out buy this property. And and maybe they're a bit naive and maybe they're a bit less naive after they've heard this, which is, what red flag should they be looking out for? We talked about obviously some compliance stuff they can look out for, and maybe in a couple of months time, the thing they should do is go onto NAPSA website and check out if the person's registered on there. But what if they're not, that doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad source, does it? But it means they need to probably do their own due diligence and homework. So what would be things to look out for, things to check, or maybe some red flags to look out for as well?
I think from, an investor perspective, if they're remote from the area that they're investing in, whether that be another part of the UK or out of the country, they need to have a good understanding of the area that they're going to be investing in. It's dangerous to go investing in an area that you don't know and trust someone else's opinion. I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't trust another source's opinion. Most sources that come to the sector have never invested themselves.
Yeah.
And while some people say, unless the source has invested themselves, I wouldn't trust them, I don't necessarily think that that's the case. Necessarily, but what I would do, and I teach this to sources, is you may not have had any deals get over the line yet, but you can show that you know your geographical area for strategy, what works and what doesn't, by assessing properties as if you were going to package them up and sell them. Show key figures, show your calculations, and show why that did work or didn't work, and hold those as a part of a portfolio of examples of what you can access on your area.
Yeah.
Sure that you have that knowledge. Now, if as an investor, you ask them what their knowledge is on the area and you've done a bit of due diligence and they come up with a lot of bull, I would run to the hills.
Yeah.
Conversely, if they want money up front or a monthly retainer initially, I would run to the hills. And I had one of these the other night on another presentation that I was doing for a networking event, and there was an investor and this sourcer wanted a monthly retainer. And I said, well, they haven't even proven themselves yet. For what?
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some kind of red flags to look out for. And again, I suppose the other obvious red flags are to check their compliance, check it's up to date and check that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. At least if the compliance is in place, they have an understanding that it has to be there, which is puts them ahead of probably 5% of the rest of the sourcing population. Sure. It doesn't necessarily mean that the deals are great. As an investor, it's still buyer beware. Mm. I hear investors complaining that I bought a deal and it wasn't fit for purpose. Well, you should know what you're assessing, that it fits your criteria and that it will work for you. Yeah. It's no good taking it. You wouldn't from an estate agent. They don't promise you it's going to rent out. Well, they might do, and if you listen to them, more from you. But, you know, you've got to have the understanding yourself to be able to assess it or go off and learn how to do it before you work with a sourcing agent. You've got to have the knowledge. You can't pass the book on to the sourcer completely. Sourcers, some of them are absolutely crap. I'm sorry, but they are. Some of them are unscrupulous arseholes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just how it is. But there are some good ones as well. I mean, it's like a secondhand car salesman. It's just finding them, isn't it? Or a great solicitor or a great accountant or anything else. It's knowing what you're looking for, knowing how to assess them and doing the due diligence on them. And more importantly, doing the due diligence on the project.
No, sure. The mistake I see made a lot, or there's quite a few in this field, unfortunately, aren't there? But one I see made a lot is that someone will meet a sourcing agent and basically like them, which is fair enough. Salespeople tend to be quite likable. And then they'll build a trust up on both sides. And then they go, okay, I like and trust this person now. And therefore, I'm prepared to, as you said, sort of abdicate responsibility to them to sort me out. They're going to look after me because I like and trust them. And that's the problem, most common and costly mistakes I see made, because you like and trust them doesn't mean, especially if you don't know what you're doing really in property, doesn't mean they know what they're doing either. And now you've got two people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said to the person who was asked for a monthly retainer, I said, okay, you know, this person's come recommended, but if they want your business, I would say to them, I don't know you. I want to build up trust with you. However, in order to do that, I want you to source me one deal without a retainer that works for me. We'll work together. We'll see if we both can work together. If we get one deal over the line and it works, then we'll sit down and we'll have a conversation about a retainer.
Yeah, very sensible. All right, I want to crack on. I've just looked at the clock and realised we might run a couple of minutes over here. So for those on the live call, you know, it'd be great if you can stick around, but understand if you can't. But we'll crack through as many of these questions as we can quickly. Howard says, great work, Tina. Arvinda says, thanks, Tina. And Julie says, great presentation, Tina. So we're off to a great start. Yogesh says, amazing work. Interested about PRS not helping companies. What is the process to register with HMRC? How long does it take?
Long-winded process for HMRC, allowed 2 hours. You have to have all of the documentation and training for money laundering provable in place before you register, because you tick a box to say that you've got it. And this is where the monkeys have got clever, because within 2 weeks, a month of some people registering, they're sending those letters out that I told you about earlier and asking for proof of documentation. Some training companies are sitting with people and telling them which boxes to tick and saying that everything will be absolutely all right. It's just a registration process. So allow 2 hours for the registration process. Make sure that you've got everything in place that legally you have to have. But more importantly, make sure that you understand what is expected of you and what the minimum standards are from HMRC before you sign. Because these are the guys that are coming out and hammering us for fines of anybody in the sector at this moment in time.
Yogesh, I think it also asks, what if I find a deal but don't want to be a professional sourcer? Can a compliance sourcer sell it for me and we split the fees?
Not if you want to operate legally. As soon as you operate that business, you negotiate, you find the deal, you hand it over to another sourcer, they take the fee, they handle the cash. If they are in breach of money laundering regulations, you can be held equally responsible. If you're carrying out the work, you have to have the compliance in place. The only way that would work, as I said earlier, is if you're just an introducer and you don't do any negotiations, you don't ask about any sales prices, you just get the name and telephone number, you hand it over to a sourcer and they do everything for you. Anything more than that, even if you just go and view the property, it could be considered that you're becoming an agent as part of the deal. So be very, very careful. And I know that a lot of training courses are saying that you can co-source until you're compliant. No, you can't.
An agent of doom in this case, which must be avoided. Is it reasonable I only pay sourcing fees upon exchange? I guess that, well, what do you think?
Yeah, we take sourcing fees upon exchange. The only cash that we ask for up front is £100 upon registration with us, which is double deductible from our first deal to stop time wasters messing us about. And it just helps us cover a little bit of our time to take them through the due diligence process and the cost of the £1,100 a year, the compliance. Because trust me, there are time wasters in the sourcing sector. There are also time wasters in the investor sector. It's kind of a two-way thing.
We have so many of them on the call today.
No, absolutely not. We don't ask for any of the sourcing fee up front, just that £100 registration, which when you purchase the first deal from us is double deductible. So you get £200 deducted from that first sourcing fee.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Well, that's packed some knowledge in there. And Avinder to finish his finish with an opinion, which is one I would probably share, which is he says, I wouldn't deal with a sorcerer unless they have a track record of personal property investments. Of course, that's a personal choice, but that's certainly one I would back up. Well, that's all wonderful stuff. Really appreciate it. Doing some quick fire questions at the end there. Hopefully that's been useful for people and got people thinking about whether they're starting up a sourcing company or indeed continuing with their sourcing company, improving their compliance, or indeed you're an investor, especially a new investor. Now let's know some of the things to look out for to make sourcing better for everybody. I will have a chat with Tina in a minute once we've finished and work out if we can post some details and post some slides and bits and pieces with the podcast. So if you want to check out Napster or anything else, you'll be able to do that. Thanks everyone for those who attended and for everyone listening to the podcast as well. Special thanks to our speaker today, Tina Walsh. I look forward to seeing you again next time.